It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Good afternoon, I'm Clay Masters. It's been a legislative session with plenty of controversy, confidential settlements made to laid off workers, the closure of a juvenile home. We've got a lot to talk about with my guest for the second half, Republican Governor Terry Branstad. Governor, welcome back to River to River.
Thank you. Great to be with you. And we're in the beautiful Iowa Law Library, which has been restored.
If you have a specific question for the governor, give us a call, 1-866-780-9100. You can also reach out to us on Facebook, tweet us at IPR Talk, or shoot us an email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Governor Branstad, we just spent a lot of time in this first half of the show talking about the children's mental health waiver. Why was funding to reduce the waiting list vetoed last year?
Well, the state has put a lot of money into this. I think... Now we're up to $180 million of state money. I didn't believe that we needed to do more on top of that. We are phasing in the redesign of mental health and developmental disabilities funding. And I believe that the legislature kind of went overboard on some of the additional spending last year. I did item veto, I think close to $200 million of excessive spending. But I believe that the redesign of mental health is going forward well. It's being phased in, and we're going to get some additional federal dollars to replace property taxes for the counties too, as a result of the health and of the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan. So I think it's going pretty well, and we heard some complaints at the time. But as I talked to the Department of Human Services and the counties today, things seem to be smoothing out and going pretty well.
We heard from Tammy in Iowa City in the first half of the show, who has a son who is experiencing difficulty because of the waiting list. The son has had to be institutionalized. Does it not make more sense to pay for community services when institutionalization is much more expensive?
Yeah, we definitely, that's part of what we're trying to do with the mental health redesign, is to put more focus on providing more community-based services instead of these large institutions. If you look back in history, Iowa built four big mental health institutes, and they used to warehouse thousands of people. We've gotten away from that. We're moving more. And the big thing that we did with the mental health redesign, instead of having to determine what county they were from and paying for it out of property tax, now we're doing it on a regional basis with a statewide funding formula. So I think it's a big improvement over the way things have been done. And obviously, change is not easy, but I believe that the transition is working out, and we're continuing to try to find better and more efficient ways and really doing a better job of meeting the mental health needs of the people of Iowa.
But are those redesigned services going to cover children as well as adults?
Yes, they cover children as well as adults. They cover both people with mental health and developmental disabilities. And in the past, that's been done on a county-by-county basis. And there was a lot of cost in transporting people all over the state. We're trying to reduce that and make sure that it's done in a better, more efficient, and better design to meet the needs of the individual patients.
On to another topic that's taking up a lot of oxygen here at the State House, these confidential settlements, more than $500,000 taxpayer dollars spent. Last week, lawmakers heard conflicting testimony about whether laid-off state employees were paid to keep the reason for their terminations confidential. We heard from one employee who said she was offered more money after refusing to sign a confidentiality agreement. That sounds like payment for silence to a lot of people. If it turns out they were paid to sign confidentiality agreements, would you hold the directors accountable?
Well, first of all, I've already taken action. I did not know about any of these confidentiality agreements. Interestingly enough, Patty Judge also said she knew nothing about the ones that occurred during the Culver Bush administration. And Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack said he was not aware of them, and they occurred in all of these administrations, but they will never happen in the future because I signed Executive Order 85, which bans and prevents confidentiality agreements. I had a very long discussion with the director of the Department of Administrative Services, and Mike Carroll. He assured me that there was no additional money provided for people agreeing to confidentiality. But I told him I was very upset because my administration has taken a strong position for openness and transparency, and I felt that confidentiality agreements are wrong. And he apologized for that and assured me that this will never happen again.
So an apology, you don't see this, though, as grounds for termination?
Well, at the time, I was not aware of it, and that's, no, I guess my feeling is, if it ever happens again, against when I have a clear directive in the executive order, then we will see, as I said, heads will roll. But I believe also that the legislature has a chance to prevent this from ever happening. And remember, my executive order, I only have the authority over the executive branch of state government. So it doesn't apply to the it doesn't apply to the judicial or legislative branches or to local governments. There is a bill in the House, which I think they're debating today, which would end confidentiality anytime there's a settlement agreement or a final determination. Now, I understand why you'd want to have things confidential if a false accusation is made against somebody. But once a determination is made and a settlement is reached, because we're talking about the use of tax dollars, I believe it should be made public. And that is that takes a change in Iowa law to do that. I have advocated for that. I believe it will pass the House of Representatives today. I hope the Democrats in the Senate will take that up and pass it and give me the opportunity to sign a new public policy that will make sure this will never happen again.
Now, it seems like we've heard two things, that workers were fired for very serious allegations or that they were part of reorganization.
And those things happen all the time in state government. Remember, we have tens of thousands of employees. Most of them are very good people. They work hard. They do a good job. We have a few unfortunate bad apples. And in some instances, those individuals, like, for instance, at Toledo, you had an individual there that was guilty of child abuse, and they dismissed him, but he appealed it, and unfortunately, the PIRB board restored him and made us pay back pay. Then it happened again, and he's been terminated again for child abuse. So these are serious things, and I believe that the taxpayers have a right to know these kind of incidents. We had another one that the Des Moines Register wrote about where an individual, a state employee, contrary to instructions that this particular patient should only have a liquid diet, gave him a peanut butter sandwich and he choked to death. This is a very serious thing, and this individual, as I understand it too, is also appealing his termination.
Now, this first person that you were talking about, is he now on a registry then that you mentioned from Toledo?
Is my understanding is the individual was terminated a second time, and that is matter is on appeal.
So
that's before the courts.
How many instances have there been then?
Well, I don't know all the instances because I mentioned these because they have been in the public. The Des Moines Register has written stories about them. There are others that we don't know about because they're confidential under the law. That's why I want to change the law so that the public would have a right to know why individuals are terminated and what kind of settlements there might be. I just believe when we're dealing with, I know these things happen in the private sector all the time. You have confidential settlements, but we're talking about the public sector and the use of tax dollars, and I don't think they should have any place here. My executive order takes care of the executive branch of state government, but it doesn't take care of the other branches or local governments, and I believe it all should be open and the public should have a right to know. And as I understand the bill, it would be retroactive to 2004.
And how many of these were reported to you? You read about them all in the Des Moines Register?
Yeah, I can only talk about ones that are in the public purview. And those have been written about in the media. But there are others, and some of which are just people that haven't done the job, that haven't showed up for work or whatever. But there are others that include things like discrimination, sexual abuse or child abuse or elder abuse. And those things are things that we need to take very seriously.
Moving on to other topics, the anti-bullying bill in the legislature may be in some trouble. There's arguments over funding. What do you support, Governor?
Well, we've worked for the last 2 years to put together an effective anti-bullying bill, which would give school's authority to deal with the cyberbullying. You know, bullying's been around for a long time, but now with the social media, kids can be tormented literally 24/7, weekends as well as during the school year. And so we've had two governor's summit, anti-bullying summits, and we've had over 1,000 attendants at each. A lot of students, teachers, parents, administrators, and I think people, the law, I think that we're proposing would say, if there's a complaint from a student, a parent, a community member, or a teacher, that the administration would have authority to investigate that and take action if this is something that seriously jeopardizes a student's ability at school. And I'm very hopeful that we will see this worked out. I know there are differences of opinion between House and the Senate, but we've been working on this. I think we've perfected it, and I support the legislation that was submitted, and it's got support from a lot of school administrators as well as teachers, parents, and students.
And so perfect case scenario for you, what would the bill look like when it's done, and what do you maybe think is the reality of what we're going to have at the end of the session?
Well, it would look like the bill we filed at the beginning of the okay. session. That would be our perfect. But I also recognize that individual representatives and senators have their own ideas. We're willing to work with them, but we think that, you know, we perfected the bill a lot from what was offered last year. And we think, and a key part of it is the involvement of the parents. Notification of the parents of both the person that is in accused of bullying and the child that's being bullied, and then also the opportunity for school administrators to work with them and meet with them, but notifying and get the parents involved. But also, we've been working really hard also to try to get students to be proactive and to stand up to bullies as well.
So with these summits on bullying prevention, I attended the first one.
Yep.
We were at the second one. I'm curious, is this the more you're educating the public, the more that your hope is that you can move forward with it?
Well, I think so. And the result of that is we've seen a lot of students and administrators as well as teachers and parents that went to these summits that have been lobbying for and supporting the legislation. So it is, but it also gives students the tools so they know what to do when they see an incident of bullying, how to stand up to it and prevent it. But one of the big challenges are those things that don't happen in the classroom or don't happen on the school grounds or in the bus, but they happen through social media. And that can be really difficult for a lot of kids to deal with when they see that. And it happens while they're home, and it happens on weekends and all of that sort of thing.
One of the issues this legislative session that I think started out being a very controversial one that we've seen evolve has been a little bit about moved forward with public education, and that's medical marijuana. At the beginning of the session, there were a lot of people who were against medical marijuana. Last week, we heard from West Des Moines Republican Senator Charles Schneider, who said his views have changed quite a bit since the beginning of the session. He used to think it was just a gateway into recreational marijuana, but he says he now feels his opinion has changed, that it's not a slippery slope. You've heard from families who say medical marijuana could help their children with seizures. Where do you stand today?
Well, I met with a number of parents who have children that are suffering from epilepsy and feel this could help them in dealing with the seizures. And they encouraged me to talk to the governors of Utah and Alabama. I have respect for both of those governors, and I've talked to the Utah governor. He recently signed a very limited law. It's got to do with an oil that's made from cannabis. It doesn't have the hallucinogenic properties that marijuana has. And he feels that this, and he said it passed in Utah, conservative state, with a strong support, and he signed it into law. He's sending me a copy of what they passed in Utah. The governor of Alabama is a doctor, and they have passed something similar but it's very limited in what it does. It doesn't legalize it, but it means that you wouldn't prosecute somebody that has it strictly to meet their health needs. And something limited like that, I think the big thing is we don't want to have unintended consequences. We don't want somebody that doesn't have this medical problem using it, you know, for the abuse of drugs. And this is one of the concerns that I've had is one of our big problems today is people abusing prescription drugs that are meant for somebody else. And we don't want to create more problems. We don't want unintended consequences. But it looks like we could end up with something that's very limited in focus, like has passed recently in Utah and Alabama. And I'm certainly working with legislators to see if there's a possibility to work something out on that before the legislature adjourns.
Would you sign a bill like that?
I would if it is. I guess I have a lot of respect for the governor of Utah and what they've done, and I'm going to visit with the governor of Alabama, and I'm working with the legislature to see. And the big thing I want to talk with law enforcement and our people that deal with drug abuse to make sure this is not something that's going to create problems for them. But it appears that a very limited proposal like this could be worked out. And there's a lot of other priorities, obviously, that we're working on. Our home base, Iowa, now has passed the House with only two dissenting votes, and they put the whole thing back together. The Senate has passed parts of it, but we're hopeful the Senate will accept the House amendment and send it to me. The bill also on the repurposing of abandoned school buildings and public buildings to be used for commercial purposes, that has passed both houses in the same form. We're expecting to receive that and maybe be able to sign that this week. And, of course, our resolution on supporting a renewable fuel standard passed unanimously both houses early in the session. We talked about the bullying bill, and we also are working on an apprenticeship bill that would triple funding for apprenticeships. So I'm pretty encouraged. A lot of our priorities are moving, and we're hopeful that before they adjourn, which I'm hoping will be in April, we can get the rest of them approved this year.
Another priority, rural broadband, Connect Every Iowan Act, seems to be a little bit of a tuft over where to move forward with
that. It's one of the more complicated pieces
How
of
so?
Legislation. Well, you've got all these different interest groups that are somewhat involved in delivering all kinds of, you know, from telephone services to broadband and all of that sort of stuff. I just want to make sure that we make broadband high-speed internet available in all parts of the state. And there's a lot of moving parts here. There's a lot of different interest groups. But I think there's interest among the public, and there seems to be support in both houses, both parties. So that is another one of our priorities, the broadband initiative that I'm hopeful will get worked out. The differences between the House and the Senate are significant, but they need to be worked out, and we'd like to see that approved before they go home.
Another controversial topic earlier this session surrounded the Iowa Juvenile Home. You ordered its closure back in January. Various solutions have been floated around. Where do we stand today with this?
Well, first of all, you recall last summer the Des Moines Register did a long series about all the abuse and misuse of children at the juvenile home. Kids were being
isolation cells,
in
yeah.
isolation cells. There was also some incidents of child abuse, children being denied their education. In other words, they use that as like a penalty. Consequently, the Department of Education ruled that we had remedial educational responsibilities for 117 kids that were denied their education. I put that money in the budget. I also appointed a task force chaired by Jerry Foxhoven, who's a real expert on whole juvenile treatment. And also I met with Jane Hudson, who's head of Disability Rights Iowa. And as a result of the task force recommendations, which they said they never should have had both delinquent girls and children in need of assistance in the same facility. So they recommended that the eight boys at that facility be moved. That was done. We also recommended that the children in need of assistance be placed in a nonprofit. There are a number of nonprofit agencies around the state that serve these kids, and they also get federal dollars. So we can actually, and they do, they are accredited by the state, and they also provide the education that they were denied at the juvenile home. Well, then it gets down to 12 girls that are delinquent girls. And so I asked Jerry Foxhoven and Jane Hudson, are these the only delinquent girls we have? No. We have others that are placed elsewhere. And they looked at the juvenile home as some kind of a place of last resort. Well, when you tell a kid, well, this is, you failed everywhere else, and this is a last resort, that's the wrong message. What you need to instead say is, we're going to find a place that can provide the best treatment for you and make sure you get the education and treatment you need so that you can overcome your problems and be successful in life. And that's what we're doing. So these children have been placed in other locations to meet their needs. I think in their accredited facilities, they're getting the education. We're also in the process of checking with the other juvenile institutions in Iowa to make sure that those kids are also getting the education they were denied at Toledo. I think, first of all, the education should be provided by local school districts or by the area education agencies, not by the Department of Human Services.
And finally, when do you expect the legislature to adjourn? When are we going to wrap things up here, Governor? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Well, I think there were some legislators that thought they could get done early, but I think it's unlikely that's going to happen. I would hope that one of the best systems we have to encourage adjournment of the legislature is cutting off per diem expenses for legislators. And the date for the cutoff of that is April 22nd. So I predict that within a week after April 22nd, the legislature will adjourn for the year.
Okay. Governor Branstad, thanks so much for being on River to River today.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from John Pimble. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.